Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 10th of December, Anno Domini 2016, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, and nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. What do you need?
No,
A sign. Yeah.
The boss posted.
You're reading the thing. Okay.
Yeah. He posted all over the place, so I don't know whether I'm supposed to read it or
well,
not.
Right. Yeah. Dave, while I was speaking, Dave came over and said, "Give me this weird look," but he was actually reading the thing that's posted on the microphone next to me. Anyway, Evan Robertson won his school science fair this year by proving just how thoughtless people can be on public Wi-Fi networks. Evan, now 11, programmed fake Wi-Fi portals and took them to shopping center food courts across the Austin, Texas area and waited to see how many agreed to some pretty outrageous conditions. For the love of free internet access, they'd have to give their okay for the Wi-Fi owner to do things like reading and responding to your emails, monitoring of input and or output, and bricking of your device. More than half of the shoppers shown these terms accepted them. Attention, holiday shoppers. Public Wi-Fi networks are dangerous, especially during the Christmas season when so many people in one spot make for easy pickings.
You think?
You think? Think of public Wi-Fi as the hacker's on-ramp to the rest of us, giving them free rein to collect our usernames and passwords and read our texts and emails. It's why Evan's fake terms and conditions might be the most honest out there, since hackers can do just about everything on his list. Look, we know you're still going to use your phone at the mall, whether it's to look up product reviews, scout for the best sale prices, or transfer a bit more money into a checking account. Even so, there are things you can and should do to stay safe. You should recognize that the word free can be a trap. Cybersecurity firm SkyCure analyzed fraudulent Wi-Fi networks around the U.S. and found 10% of them had the word free in their names. You should know what's nearby. Before you click on that network named Apple Store, look around to see if there's really an Apple Store close by. It could be a hacker pretending to be a legitimate network.
And especially if it's spelled wrong.
Right. You should drop off when things get weird. Disconnect from the network if your phone starts showing error message or keeps crashing, although it may be too late by then. Pay attention to the top of the web page. Always look for a green lock symbol, which shows you're on an encrypted connection. That symbol means any login information or messages you send over the internet will be unreadable by anyone intercepting it over a public Wi-Fi network. If you can use a VPN, it's an extra step and it's a little complex, but it will encrypt all your data before it even leaves your phone. And think about what's at stake. Some things just shouldn't be done over a public Wi-Fi network. Hold off logging into your bank's mobile app, for instance, until you have a more secure connection later. And finally, don't forget for 1 minute that public Wi-Fi is dangerous. It's just not as safe as plugging into your wired home network. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is public Wi-Fi is dangerous. Your choices are, I know, and I'm very cautious. I know, and I don't care. I've never thought about it, and public what now? So far, we have 32 votes. Wow, which and 19% of you know and are very cautious. Another, 63% of you, there, that makes more sense. No one are very cautious. 19% of you say public what now? Of course you do. 16% of you say I know and I don't care. And only 3% of you have never thought about it. So once you have voted, however, I suspect you'll have a lot more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right-hand side underneath the search post section is fascinating stuff. The top link on there is the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. And so far, at least, the first poll discussion in that list is 10 December 16, public Wi-Fi is dangerous. So far, only two of us have posted, but we welcome you joining in. And, of course, you can always give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Lines are open, and operator is standing by.
Yes, I am.
Yes, he is.
I remember one of those terms and conditions things a couple of Christmases ago. A British company had a checkbox on the order form that for a pound, you agree to sell your firstborn child. And no one unchecked it.
Yeah.
So they paid an extra pound on their order.
Right.
And legally now they have to give up their firstborn child. So wouldn't you look to see what extra charges you have to pay?
No. People click never happy. Do. Yeah.
But then, and then you complain about the bill later. Well, if you looked at it ahead of time, you might not have to pay half of that.
Why do you think all those extra toolbars and stuff get downloaded all the time?
Yeah.
Nobody ever pays attention to that.
If it's money, pay even more attention.
Yeah, but they get click happy because they're in a hurry. They want instant gratification.
Right, and then it's your fault when they bring you the machine and it's all infected again.
Oh, yeah. Forget
well, that. Well, you cleaned it up a week ago and now it's all infected again. It's your fault. No, you keep clicking on crap.
We had a guy bring his machine back in this week. Same thing.
Yeah, I've got another one. As a matter of fact, I just got a call yesterday, and I had cleaned the machine back up in June, and now all of a sudden she says, and the machine's getting slow, and I don't know what's going on and everything else. And I says, well, did you run super intense? Yeah, I ran those and that, but I think I got into something bad. Yeah, you might have.
Yep.
So it's coming back in again.
Yep. 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 It gets to the point where I think we've said it enough. You know, it's now time for people to accept responsibility for their own actions. If you're constantly downloading, quote, free, unquote, software, and suddenly you've got all these programs you don't know how they got on your machine and all this other stuff. You know how they got on your machine.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't read before you clicked. And it really is that simple. Read before you click. If something comes up that you don't understand or you don't think you want, just uncheck it. It's that easy.
Speaking of toolbars, I just cleaned one up this past week. 8 toolbars on there. And they were wondering why they said, well, before there was a lot more stuff on the screen. Yeah. And I go, yeah, and probably a few less toolbars on it.
Yeah.
I really never paid attention to that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Now, and part of the problem, of course, is that you can add legitimate toolbars.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, you can all, you know, there's there's the menu bar and there's, you know, you see it, well, certainly on Microsoft Office, they now take the top third of the screen with that stupid ribbon bar.
David Pogue has a great a video on that from one of his talks. You turn every toolbar Microsoft Word has on and there's one line of text to type in.
Yep. Yep. Now you can pretend your machine is one of those old TRS-80s. Remember those?
Yep.
The TRS 100s.
The first computer I actually started programming on was a Trash 80.
Yep,
and it had an 80k 8-inch 80k floppy drive.
Yep, I think it was the TRS 100 though.
Yep.
Was the one that was a little portable.
A step up from the.
Yeah, there it is. Yep. Yeah, that actually had like 8 lines, I think, or 6 lines, or some number, but. It was a pretty old little tool. I remember playing with one of those and thinking, man, this thing is the nuts. It was small and it was portable and you could take it to class and you could, you know, type all your notes on it and then upload them to a real computer later. It was great. I always thought it was the coolest thing.
And back then, well, at least when I was still in school, you could use calculators on like physics exams.
Yep.
Where it wasn't the math that they were testing you on.
Yep.
And so I had a pocket computer, of course, and
sure
you could program it with things other than arithmetic.
Right. The height of technology when I was in school, I had a tie clip that was a slide rule.
Nice.
Ooh.
It was great.
Yeah.
It was great.
Mm-hmm.
My uncle, God love him, gave it to me, and I used it in every exam. Every exam. I'm sure I got extra points on them because the teachers would all be tickled pink when they saw it.
Pull a slide rule.
Yep.
Yeah.
Did you bring your slide rule, Mr. Francesco? Yes. Yes, sir. Here it is.
Yeah. Matter of fact, because we had to take so many courses in the Marine Corps, extra courses and that helped advance you as far as going up in rank and that. And one of the courses I took, believe it or not, was slide rule.
Yep.
In the Marine Corps.
I couldn't do anything with it now except put a rubber band on it and launch the middle. But back then, I knew what I was doing with it.
I remember seeing videos of a slide rule versus an abacus.
Abacus won, didn't it?
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Abacus, if you knew what you were doing with an abacus, it was... I had a friend
who
could use the abacus. Mm-hmm. She was... And it would just...
That was the Chinese, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The great of the abacus.
I couldn't remember if it was Chinese or Japanese.
She made the noise that it made was like a machine gun.
Yeah,
with the beat.
It was so fast.
And sliding things from one side to the other. Yeah,
she'd come up with an answer, and I always thought, I need to learn how to do that. And I never did, of course. I needed to learn how to do that. But, now, of course, we don't think anymore. Back in the day, I got a job at Worldwide News, as a matter of fact.
Is that place still even around?
But it's not where it used to be. I don't remember where it is now. If it is still around. I got a job at Worldwide News on the cash register. And people would bring up, they'd have a newspaper and a book and a cup of coffee and a dirty magazine and whatever they had. Yeah. And, And at 7:30 in the morning, there's a line of 50 people and you can't take time. So I would be able to go, bum, 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 bum. That's going to be $15.82.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, here's your change. I couldn't do that now with a gun to my head. Quickly adding them up. Because now I use a calculator for everything. Now I second guess myself all the time.
Yep.
6 + 4. Wait a minute. Oh, screw it. I got a calculator up here.
My dad would balance his checkbook with the calculator. And then go back and do it by hand to make sure the calculator was right.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
In my younger years, I used to work at Shaler's.
Yeah.
And taking orders. And you'd get 4 or 5 folks coming at you. And you'd sit there and you'd just go, this. And you're adding it up quick in your head. All right, it's $18.50.
Yep.
Whatever.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I worked at Barney's. It was the same thing, By the time you had that 2:30 in the morning rush after the Varsity Inn closed, you'd have people 6, 7, 8 deep standing at the counter. You go, what do you want? What do you want? What do you want? What do you want? You turn around and yell, 3 cheeseburgers, 4 hamburgers, 2 shakes, 5 orders of fries, 2 onion rings. You put it in your head and you just add it all up and do it and everybody get the right stuff. And it's the way we worked back in those days. Now, can't do any of those things anymore. Let's take the break and then we'll come back. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco. Oh, Steve Ray. Steve, is that you, Steve?
Yeah,
me, Nick Francesco. We have Victor from Irondequoit on the line. We'll get to him when we come back. And we will be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites and the truly great and truly member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Otto Bruno. Join me tomorrow from 12 to 2 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, we have Victor from Irondequoit on the line. Hiya, Victor. What's up?
Hi, guys. I'd like to share an app that I put on my S7 phone this week.
Sure.
It's called App Lock, APP Lock. It's free and you can pay for it. What it does is it'll password protect individual applications on your phone if you'd like.
Nice.
I did it. I password protected my gallery and my Amazon photos and my email, just in case, you know, you're with a bunch of people and maybe they want to, one doesn't have a cell phone, you give it to them, and, you know, you may end up taking off by going to the bathroom or something, and you don't want them going through your phone. So this way, they'll censor things they can't. And I love the app. I just thought I'd share it with you guys.
Nice, nice. Thanks, AppLock. That's great.
Yeah, it's available in Apple also on their, I don't know, what iTunes, I guess, is what their store is.
Yeah.
And of course, Google Play. So I love it. It's really nice. And I got the pay version. It's like less than $5. It says there's no ads. And I'm just thrilled with it, actually.
Great tip. Thanks, Victor.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks. And I love the fact that he paid for it. I think we should pay for the things we use. That's what adults do.
Yeah, so really.
I'm delighted to see that. And, we are finding that people are way too cavalier about their phones, way too trusting and way too loosey-goosey with them. Victor is right. We often hand people our phones, and then, you know, we're at lunch and we got a picture we want to show them, so we hand them the phone, and then we get involved in another conversation. They've still got our phone. I don't know what they're doing with my phone. Now, most of the time, of course, you trust these people. But, you know, you strangers will come up and say, can I borrow your phone? Can I make a call? Whatever it is. Some of us will say yes. Some of us will say no. But we've now relinquished control of that phone to another human being, and it's unlocked. So if you want to be more careful about that, something like AppLock will help. Of course, that doesn't help when it comes to them installing some sort of backdoor or whatever on your phone. But if you don't let it out of your sight, you should be good, too.
Physical access is everything. If someone has physical access to your device, they can do whatever they want.
Exactly.
In just a few moments, and then at their leisure, log into it later.
That's right. That's exactly right. And I see the same thing all the time at RIT and in other places as well. People just get up and walk away from their computers. They don't lock the screen. They don't close their doors. They don't do anything else to protect them. They won't leave their wallets or their purses on a table, but they'll leave their computers, which let me put in a back door and then go wander around in their banking application later. You know, you have to pay attention to these things. And we don't see enough people doing that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is our friend Al. How are you, Al?
I'm good, Nick. How are you guys doing?
Peachy, thanks. What's up?
Well, since you got talking about apps, I got two questions to pose to you guys or your audience.
Yep.
Long-time DOS user, et cetera, know my way around, but boy, Android is still puzzling me sometimes. So
sure.
If somebody could point me in the direction of how to understand the file system in Android, it's so confused about accessing certain files, and I can go three different paths that seem to be totally dissimilar. It baffles me.
Yeah, mostly what you're talking about is the difference between the SD card and the real SD card.
Oh, there's a real SD card and a not real SD card.
Well, it depends on your phone, of course.
Oh, okay.
Here's the deal. When the Android was first designed, it was designed to use an SD card. The problem was it was hardwired to use an SD card. And if you didn't have one, Android didn't work. So what they did was they used the operating system to make a fake SD card partition. So now if you have a phone that can put in a real SD card, you now have three partitions. There's the Android partition, there's Android's SD partition, and then the real SD card.
Lovely.
Oh, this cleared up a whole bunch of things.
Clear as mud, as teacher used to tell me.
Exactly. But now Al understands what he's seeing now, why there's two SD card paths that you can take in a thing, and which one you set up to do what is important. So, for example, many, many people like to put their photos on an SD card. If you don't have an SD card, your phone is now broken. Or the solution that Google came up with is it uses the fake SD card partition. If you've got a real SD card, it'll use the real SD partition. But that also means that if you didn't have one and then you put one in, or some apps don't make the distinction well enough or whatever, so you don't know where the heck anything is until you actually go there and look for it yourself. Yeah, so the problem is twofold. One is the way Google hardwired a fake SD card directory into the system. And the second is lazy programmers who don't look to see if there's a real SD card in there and just use the fake one when they should be using the real one.
Okay, great. Well, Nick, in 60 seconds, you've cleared up 6 months worth of mental churn.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Okay. Now, I got a second one for you. This is a little different.
Sure, go ahead.
Again, going back to the idea that I go back to the old days, and I always like to see what's going on, who's doing what, where the files are going, et cetera.
Yeah.
Is anyone aware of a Windows 10 utility that will monitor the ports and tell you what files are being transferred in and out by IP?
Well, theoretically, NetStat will do that.
I'm sorry, which one?
NetStat.
NetStat, okay.
Which is built into Windows and the Mac. You just have to know how to read it.
Fun.
Yeah. There is a service from GRC called Shields Up that will check to see if you have any ports open to the public internet, which more checks your router than it does your computer. But that can be a big issue, too. You don't want to have any ports open to the internet that bad guys can get in through.
Certainly. But right. My concern is when I'm looking at it right now, I fire up my laptop after being shut down for a couple of days, and all of a sudden I'm seeing 580 megabytes being poured into my machine from the internet.
Right.
I don't know if it's files I'm sharing through Google Drive or other less benign things.
Right. Or if it's some update happening in the background that won't tell you what's going on until you're done. One thing you can do, if what you're mostly worried about is what comes over the internet, there is a program called Wireshark. Wireshark.
Yep.
Wireshark. And that will monitor... It's a little convoluted the way the thing looks on the screen, so you have to learn to read it, but it will tell you everything that's happening on your machine. You can actually watch it send email and all the handshaking that goes on and everything else, just as an example of the sort of thing you can do. And Wireshark will do all of that. I know it will do it for the Ethernet ports, and I know it will do it for the serial ports. I've never thought about whether or not it would do it for the USB ports specifically, although theoretically, if it does it for serial ports, it should do it for USB ports.
Different level of the OSI model.
Right. But theoretically, it shouldn't be difficult to make that happen, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Okay.
I also found one in the Microsoft Store called Network Port Scanner. Nice name.
Yes,
that will scan your network and find open ports on any computer in your network.
But it doesn't tell you what's coming down them.
Yeah,
right.
It's the content.
It just shows you what's open, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Wireshark shows you the content and, in fact, shows you in greater detail than you really want to know.
Those chuckles are worrying me, you know.
Yeah,
I only have so many years on this earth.
Yeah. Well, right. I've spent a lot of years with Wireshark, and I can read it pretty cleanly now. But boy, I'll tell you, when I first looked at it, I thought,
If you can write your own IP stack, you'll understand Wireshark.
Yeah, mostly.
If you got nothing better to do,
but you can. I mean, it's once you realize that it's all just code. You know, somebody else wrote the code, and all you have to do is read it. So, for example, when you send an email, there's like 200 or 300 lines of code that come into Wireshark. Well, it's the your system says, hello, is there? I need to send email. And the SMTP server says, okay, I'm listening. Okay, I want to send an email. Okay, what do you want to send? I mean, most of these protocols are talky, and that's what you're seeing is the back and forth there. But it really does break it down at that level. So if there's something you really want to analyze deeply, boy, is it possible.
Okay, good. Hey, then I'm going to throw one other thing I just stumbled across, and you guys are maybe you've already mentioned it, but a website called us-cert.gov.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If only for the fact it's a fairly impartial, obviously it's hopefully impartial, but it does list a number of neat tools for sniffing out problems.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So it's it just gives you another source of information.
Yes, and a lot of the scam stuff will go there, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a great site, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, yep. So they're talking about Avalanche and all that.
Yep, yep.
In fact, one of the ways the scammers convince you you're infected with a virus is to open NetStat and look at all those things.
Yeah.
Okay, that's your email program. That's your web browser. That's
right. All stuff that's normal.
Yeah, all of those mean that someone is attacking you right now. Yes, yes, you are on the other end of the phone.
Well, that's, exactly. But that's the thing, though. They get some innocent victim that doesn't really know, you know, especially, say, an elderly person.
Yep.
You know, oh, they're terrible. Well, I can't have that happening. You know, and they fall prey.
I mean, I just ran NetStat, and holy crap, look at this list of stuff on my computer.
It's
and the first one is Bluehost. Oh, my gosh. Yep.
It's screens and screens and screens long.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
So, in other words, I should set up for myself in the future, say 10 years down the road, and say, I need to give myself a intelligence or a Turing test and say, are you still competent to be allowed to navigate the net?
Yeah, right. We should all have a driver's license for the internet.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, thank you guys.
Absolutely, yep. Al. Have not a good problem. One, have fun.
Yep. Thanks.
Have a good holiday.
You too. Apparently have three connections open to the NTP server here at Grill. All right, check my time once, but then why is it still open?
Who knows?
Who knows? Mm-hmm. Actually, there was an NTP protocol attack a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, there was.
Okay. And so all the NTP network time servers had to figure out how to fix themselves. Getting accurate time across the internet can be tricky.
Yeah,
very tricky.
Because computers need to talk in nanoseconds, and you send your computer asks another computer what time it is, and it might take milliseconds to get the answer. So, you know, that's 1,000 times slower.
Yep. Right. And so they not only send the time, but they also send the lag.
Yeah.
You know, this is what I have as the time, and this is how long it took the time to get to you. So you better add those milliseconds in.
Yeah, compensate.
Yep.
And it matters, especially in satellite communication. You know, they're 20,000 miles up, you know, orbiting at you know, 50,000, or about, what is it, 25,000 miles an hour.
I don't know. You're the rocket guy.
Yeah, I'm the rocket. In fact, I'm wearing my rocket shirt. Yeah. Tonight's the rocket club party down in Pifford. Or if you're fancy, Pifard.
Pifard. but I'd be going down to Pifard this evening.
That must be a blast.
Yeah. But, so the time is different, you know, from the ground to orbit. Mm-hmm. And there are measurable gravitational time dilation effects. Some of the astronauts on orbit are actually several milliseconds younger than, was it Scott Kelly and his brother? Right. The twin brother astronauts, because one of them spent more time on orbit than the other, and time is measurably slower.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Because they're farther away from the gravity well, and being able to measure that, you know, small amount of time is really interesting.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And they have to account for it in GPS satellites to know where your car is. So you know, turn now doesn't mean that driveway; it means this driveway.
Yeah.
Right. Right. U.S. CERT, by the way, is the United States Computer Emergency Readiness Team. And basically, they are the group that gives you all the alerts and tips and things like that about a safer and stronger internet for all Americans. They respond to all the incidents and they analyze the threats and that stuff. So, for example, current activity, Google just released a security update for Chrome, and they mentioned that, and Mozilla has also released some security updates, so and they talk about the holiday phishing scams and malware campaigns and stuff that are going on. So if you're interested in security, that's a pretty good site to be part of. They have publications, they have alerts and tips, they even have careers.
Ooh.
So you can go get a job with them. So that's pretty cool.
But we're getting into the season though now. Especially with the holiday shoppers and everything else, we can't caution folks enough that you know some of these scams are going to come across. And as I have said, I think now for over a decade, if you have to stop and think about it for more than 10 seconds, delete it.
Right. And of course, that's the problem with people who don't think.
Yeah. You know, if it's something from the bank or something from United States Postal Service and you haven't ordered anything or anything else, delete it. Because you know what? They'll send you a reminder.
And especially now in the holiday season, you probably have placed a lot of online orders. Mm-hmm. Beware of the scam tracking numbers. Oh, we lost your package. Please enter the tracking number.
Yep.
They know the tracking number.
Yep.
So you give your tracking number to a bad guy. The bad guy reroutes the package and they pick it up.
And again, right. There's this thing called the telephone.
Yep.
You can pick it up and call the individual company and, you know, verify it with a living human being over the phone and find out, you know, if this or that.
I got an email the other day that said your web domains have been transferred to another person. Well, that's bad.
Yeah.
If that happens. So instead of responding to the email, I went to the website of my registrar and entered the information there on to get the thing. And I got a thing back that said it was a glitch. It didn't happen. Nothing happened. I'm sorry.
So but all is
good. That's the way to do it. Instead of responding to the email, I went to the website. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported jazz. 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is Rob Linton. Join me weekdays from 4 to 6 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Edrick.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
And we just got fuzzy.
We just got fuzzy?
There we are now. Yeah, we're fuzzy for some reason on the stream.
Well, okay. I think that's true of both of us.
Well, okay, yeah, we're blurry, I should say that.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
All right, the entire world seems to have settled on a black rectangle of glass and metal as the appropriate design for a smartphone. But Samsung is going to experiment with bendable and two-screen models next year, according to a new report. The world's largest smartphone maker is rumored to be creating two models using organic light-emitting diodes, OLED screens, for 2017. Remind me to tell you an interesting fact about OLED screens. In modest quantities to test market reaction. One model will be rectangular with a flexible, bendable OLED screen. A second model will resemble a tablet that can fold in half in the middle, with a more phone-like experience with a screen on the front and back. The once fast-growing smartphone market has slowed this year, especially at the high end, with worldwide shipments forecast to increase less than 2%, according to IDC. That could be prompting manufacturers to offer more innovative and provocative new products to stand out. Apple is rumored to be working on new iPhones with edge-to-edge glass screens and wireless charging. Whoa! Next year, for example. Samsung has also wanted to bury the memory of the exploding battery debacle that led to the worldwide recall and cancellation of its Galaxy Note 7 phone. And you can ask Dave Boom Boom Enright about that. A hot new product, assuming that it avoids any technical malfunctions, could improve Samsung's image and finances. The note recall caused a 96% plunge in third quarter earnings at the company's mobile division. Samsung has twice in the past sold phones with slightly bendable screens. In 2013, the Galaxy Round came out with a bendable right and left edges. And in 2014, a Galaxy Note Edge had one flexible side. Samsung also showed off a smartphone with two screens connected by a hinge resembling a book binding in a YouTube video from 2014. Other companies are working on phones with flexible screens or dual monitors similar to the rumored Samsung models, including Lenovo, Oppo, and JDI. So, are you ready for a new form factor in your phone? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, I'm so glad that I held out, you know, because they kept bugging me, you know, that I had to turn that Note 7 in, even though I'd gotten the refurb one.
Right.
And there were still no issues with it. Even the day I turned that in, that thing did not get warm. It was working fine. Like you say, the small percentages, but that's all it took. And I'm glad I waited and got the Pixel XL by Google because, again, as I told you, none of the other bloatware, the other apps, well, it's part of the phone. It's built into the phone. You can't get rid of those.
Yeah.
Google made this, because it's their phone and Android, very clean and easy to use. And the camera.
Yeah, I'd like to get the new Pixel myself, the Pixel XL. That would be nice.
The camera, though, it's unbelievable. The pictures that takes. I'm very impressed with it. Very impressed.
It's a very nice phone. It's got probably the best camera on the market right now.
Yeah.
It's fast. It's clean. And because, like you said, it's from Google, there's nothing in it but the pure Android experience.
Oh, yeah. It came with, of course, the calendar, Google Calendar. It's normal Google stuff. Google Calendar, Google Photo, of course, the Google search, the Chrome search, and Gmail.
And that's it.
Yeah, and then all the other apps I've had to download.
Yep. As opposed to my Samsung phone, where I had to download most of that stuff and then turn off the Samsung versions, which are still taking up space in my phone, and I can't get rid of them.
Yeah, no, you're stuck with them. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Oh no, I would love to have a Pixel.
And the other great thing, even though I'm with a well-known company, Google still controls, because it's their phone, the updates.
Yep.
Because your bigger companies can control the updates normally for the operating systems and the updates until they want to do it.
And that means you get them first and soon.
Yeah. So, I mean, since I've had my phone, I've had at least three different updates. Matter of fact, I just had one just a couple days ago just for the camera.
Yep.
Just a simple, here's another one to improve the performance on the camera. Okay. But they're great about doing it.
Yep.
I am very impressed with the Google phone.
Yeah, it's a pretty hot phone, and people are loving it. And I think it would do Google Fi if people wanted to get rid of their carrier altogether. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty clever idea, pretty nice phone. I would love to have one, but not in the cards right at the moment.
Yeah.
And my phone works fine.
Last year's model, darn it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but the only reason, I was happy with the Note 7. I mean, I was forced to.
It was a really good phone in the market.
Yes, it was excellent.
It's a shame they had the problems.
Yeah. Well, they say now the problem is because they squeezed it in too tight.
Literally. Squeezed it in.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Literally. Yeah. And they're saying that may be a problem with the Apple phones now, because Apple's having some separate issues, but they're saying it may be similarly.
It's the quest to put in more battery life, so you need a bigger battery.
Right.
Well, make it 2 millimeters thicker. I don't really care.
Apple has...
I'm going to put a case on it anyway.
right. Apple has this thing about they have to have the thinnest phone in the market, and in fact, they don't. LG does, by the way, but still... Mm-hmm. They want to have the smallest, thinnest, lightest phone on the market, and now they're having issues. I'm not shocked, frankly.
Yeah, really. One other thing I noticed is, talked about technology like that and the holidays coming up. Again, I was shopping in a couple stores, not seeing many of the desktop computers.
Yep.
At stores.
More and more
laptops. You go even to, say, a place like Best Buy. They might have a couple. Yeah, they're tucked over here. Everything is laptops or tablets.
Laptops are kind of sort of on a downtrend now, with tablets gaining popularity
tablets
and power.
Tablets are gaining popularity, and so are Chromebooks.
Yeah.
Which makes me crazy. Google has missed this holiday selling season. There are no new Chromebooks.
Well, maybe because they're waiting for, because they said early spring, beginning of spring... We're going to be able to do the Android apps.
But
they're waiting for the new Intel chip, and there's been a lot of rumors in the Apple world too that we haven't had the Mac upgrades recently because Apple's been waiting for the next Intel chips to come out, and there's a lot of rumors that Apple's going to start making their own desktop chip. They already design and order their A series tablet chip. Based on ARM,
right.
And so they might do something similar for the Core series they're using on their desktops.
Yeah, but like you say, you're seeing less and less desktop units. In fact, I had one person bring one in. It was a Dell box that she ordered and got it in. She wanted me to take, because her other box died, And she wanted me to take the hard drive out of that one and just put it in as extra storage.
Sure.
I pop it open. That ain't happening. There was only one slot for a hard drive.
Oh, sure.
It's like, seriously? Mm-hmm.
Yep, yep, yep.
But yeah,
because
all right,
we want small.
Yeah, but here's the crazy thing. There were four SATA connections on the motherboard. So, yeah, the hard drive's using one, and the DVD's using the other. Why put the other two on there?
Right.
You can't use them.
Generic cases. I ran into a small desktop form factor, and when we opened it up to do something, it was a laptop motherboard tucked in this, you know, tower case.
Mm-hmm.
It had a laptop power supply on it, and you couldn't upgrade anything.
Yep. Well, and this is the thing that I don't understand. People are buying laptops in lieu of desktops and then never going anywhere with the laptop. You're paying hundreds of dollars more to have that laptop form factor. If you're not actually going to use it as a laptop, why are you spending that money?
Well, that's why you buy the 200-mile-an-hour car.
Yeah.
You're never going to go 200 miles an hour, but it's nice to know you could.
Yeah, I suppose.
Unless you have a weak moment.
Well, you know, even with laptops, it's, you know, you're going from the living room to the den. That's mostly where they move.
Maybe. Yeah. I suppose that's how that works. All right. Well, let's get back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Webster, New York. What's up, Jim?
Yeah. Hi, guys. I have a cell phone and a smartphone, and I'm still sort of new to it. I've only had it for about a year. And I've gotten addicted to YouTube and Instagram, unfortunately. It's a lot of fun. So,
is this an Android phone or an Apple phone?
I'm sorry?
Android or Apple?
It's an Android.
Microsoft. we didn't even give you the chance. It might be Microsoft.
Or BlackBerry. Okay, so you're addicted to YouTube.
YouTube and Instagram. And but what this does is very much like my laptop, is I'm perpetually signed in to these applications, I guess they'd be called. So what my question is we were talking about the security issues with these smartphones. Do I have anything to worry about as far as could anyone, because I'm perpetually signed in, is it possible someone could grab a password to one of those two, like Instagram? Instagram is important to me because I'm uploading things to it often.
Right.
So could is there any risk to my password being stolen through any kind of exposure from it being just on and logged in all the time?
Well, theoretically, no. And here's why. I don't know about Instagram, but I believe it's true of Instagram too. And I know that YouTube is a secure connection. So it's encrypted. It's an encrypted connection.
Okay.
So theoretically, no, over the air, theoretically. Go ahead.
But if you have, say, a note that lists all your passwords?
Right. The phone itself is not protected. So, again, as we said earlier, if you hand that phone to somebody,
right,
or they accidentally get in through another way, there's a great program called AirDroid, which actually runs a web browser on your phone so that you could then log into that from your desktop and transfer photos and stuff over from your phone to your desktop easily and quickly over your home network. But if you don't remember to shut it down and you leave it on, you're broadcasting essentially a web browser that opens up your phone to anybody who gets on.
Oh, and if someone has physical access to your phone for a few minutes, they could install this program.
Right.
So you want to make sure you have a reasonably short screen lock. And if you are going to get up and leave your phone behind, you know, you get up for, you know, refill your coffee.
Well, don't do that first.
Don't do that first. Carry it with you. Or lock it manually when you get up and move away from it. Don't let the auto lock turn on.
Right. In addition, as Victor said at the top of the show, there's a program called App Lock.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, okay. and that's certainly useful as well. But it's certainly YouTube and I suspect Instagram are secure connections.
And many apps are now working with the fingerprint reader that most phones have now, so that you use your fingerprint to log in rather than a password. And so that's a little bit more secure. Unless they cut your finger off.
I heard someplace that one in every 10,000 people has the same fingerprint. I don't know if that's true, but I heard that a long time ago.
I would doubt it. Yeah. The whole basis of our legal system is that fingerprints are not the same.
No, right. I'm a little embarrassed to say that I do not have any kind of a lock on my phone. Is that under a specific under setting somewhere?
Generally have to turn that off manually. They come asking you for a passcode lock.
This phone, when I got it last year, just about this time, was their lowest priced one, and it was older, I guess.
Okay, so under settings, there's a section called security.
Right.
And under security, you can encrypt the phone. You can do all kinds of stuff to it. Set up a SIM lock. All kinds of stuff. So check some of that stuff out and the things that you can do. There's also a thing called, depending on how new your phone is, a thing called Smart Lock, which lets you decide when and where and how to lock the phone. So, for example, my phone is locked when it is not in my home or when it is not near my watch.
Okay.
But when I am wearing my smartwatch or I'm in my home, it's unlocked. So at home, I don't have to type in a password. But if you were to take my phone and walk 10 feet away from my body and therefore be out of range of my Bluetooth, my phone would lock.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you have a watch that helps with this.
Yeah. I have a smartwatch.
Okay.
And I'm almost embarrassed to say. I have a smartwatch, and you can hook the two of them up so that the smartwatch, the proximity to the smartwatch unlocks my phone.
And many of them will unlock your computer, too.
And then, in fact, my phone, if my phone is unlocked, my Chromebook will be unlocked.
Yep.
Okay, I'll let you go. Thanks so much for your help. Can you talk more about your watch when we come back from the break?
Happy to do so. And that's a good segue. We are going to take a slightly longer break. You've wasted an hour of your life, but you're going to get a chance to do it all over again. We'll be back in just a few more minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites, and we are truly grateful to be solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 4 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Before we get back to the phones, I want to talk a little bit about smartwatches. Jim asked me if I would do that, and I will talk a little bit about them. I own an LG G, the original model. I did not pay $300 or $400 for this watch. It was on Woot for $70. And I thought, well, for $70, I'll give it a shot. What the heck?
Yep.
And I love it. I absolutely love it. I've got an app. The face of the thing is, of course, I've got my daughter's face in the background. I always have that. And then it also tells me what the weather is and what the temperature is and what the prediction is for tomorrow and the next day and the sunrise and the sunset and the battery life and the battery life of my phone. And I can receive text messages. I can send text messages from it. So when I'm driving, I'm completely hands-free. I can just say to my phone, send text to Dave Enright. And then I speak the text, and off it goes to him. It's very easy, very
That's
fast.
Cool.
I see my texts. I can get all kinds of stuff. It tells me how many steps I walk, except for Thursday. when I walked for 3.5 hours, it never said a word. Today, I put my phone on just before I left to come here. So it said, good start, you know, 78 steps or some stupid thing. I said, thanks. Thanks so much. You know, because I wasn't wearing it all morning while I was walking around doing
stuff.
I left
mine on the charger this morning, and I'm still trying to tap where it's supposed to be.
But I really, I have come to rely on it.
Which is ironic. So for years, we weren't wearing watches because we had phones.
Right.
And now we're sort of back to watches again.
Because we have phones because and now the watch is useful.
Yeah. Because it's so hard to take your phone out of your pocket to see what time it is.
When a phone call comes in, I can see it on the screen. When a text message comes
in. That goes back to Dick Tracy. We want that. So the original flip phone was Star Trek.
Yeah.
And now the wrist telephone is Dick Tracy.
It has an app that will record voice. I don't have a camera in this model, but I do have a microphone. Mm-hmm. So every time I go, for example, to the doctor or to a lawyer or whatever, I start the app and I record everything that everybody says.
Mm, cool.
It wears my battery down, but normally I get 3 days off a battery. So, you know.
And how long does it really take to charge? Overnight?
At most, overnight. Yeah. I mean, I put it on the charger when I go to bed.
That's part of my problem because mine does sleep tracking. I leave it on overnight.
Yeah.
So I charge it when I'm in the shower.
Right.
And sometimes I forget to get it off the charger. Right. Mine is waterproof, so I could wear it in the shower because, you know, it would count motion as you're scrubbing your hair.
Oh, yeah. You're scrubbing your head.
The things you do in the shower.
Yeah, the things you do in the shower. This is also waterproof.
Boy, you're really active today. Yeah. Right.
This is also waterproof, so I don't worry about any of that. So, but you know, the smartwatches have become, actually, to me at least, I thought, okay, I'll wear it for a while. Yeah. People have been asking me about them. Mm-hmm. This one was only $70. Let me buy it, wear it for a while, put it in a drawer. I'll never look at it again. I wear it all the time. It's actually become useful to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I miss when I've forgotten it. So I really do kind of like my smartwatch. I do. We should get to the phones. Poor Ray has been hanging on very patiently for the last 4 minutes. Hi, Ray. What's up?
I got a couple iMac questions.
Sure.
We inherited an iMac earlier this year. And one of the questions I got, does the time backup that I use... does that back up the photos? Because I can't tell if it does or not.
Time Machine, Apple's built-in backup program, backs up everything unless you tell it not to.
Okay.
So if you go into the Time Machine settings, there's an options button where you can tell it what not to back up.
Okay.
So check that and see if there's anything there. But by default, it backs up everything. Your photos, your email, your documents, your, you know, everything.
Okay. The other question, the main reason I'm calling, is yesterday I had issues. I was trying to upgrade newer version of LibreOffice, and it seemed like when it got to the verify step, it just got stuck like right at the end. And I don't know if this is an ongoing issue. I never had a problem, and the only way I got it to go based on, I guess, reading one of the forums was hold the control key down and then, you know, click on the app, and then it seemed to work. But I've never had an issue with anything installing until this particular situation. And I don't know if anyone else has experienced that kind of a situation.
I'm checking the system requirements. Do you know what system version you're running? You can find that out from the Apple menu about
it's,
this
it's
Mac.
It's the OS X, what, a 10 Yosemite or whatever it is. I mean, it's, you know, the machine's only about a year old.
Yeah, Yosemite's 10.10, so that's two versions old.
Yeah.
I am trying to see. I don't see a button that says system requirements.
Because earlier this year, I had installed the prior version of LibreOffice, like 5.1. Didn't have a problem. Everything's been working fine. And I went to upgrade to the newer version only because, for whatever reason, I didn't have the database stuff in there. I don't know why. And so I said, well, I'll upgrade it. And it installed and everything until it got to the verification. And I kind of saw in the forums other people seemed to be having similar issues with it.
It might have just been a bug in that version.
Okay. I tried even going back to an older version that I had same issue happen at that point.
Yeah,
there is an issue
for 10.10.5 OS X Yosemite. You're right. Many people have been having this particular issue, and it is the same one you're having, where they get stuck,
right,
on the verification.
Let's see. If you could upgrade to 10.11 or 10.12.
Yeah, I mean, I.
But then you got to worry about compatibility issues with other software.
What they're basically saying, as near as I can figure out, and Steve understands Mac stuff better than I do, but what it seems they're saying is that it's somehow been listed as quarantined.
Yeah, there's a feature built into the Mac called Gatekeeper that tries to block bad programs. And sometimes a good program can get accidentally blocked. And quarantine. That might be X-Protect, which is the antivirus program built in.
Right. But what there is a
command line. I don't know about running the command line.
Yeah,
it's like getting into the registry.
I'm going to go to terminal and put in this.
Yeah, it's
the X attribute. Right, and it says minus D, which probably means delete from com.apple.quarantine/application/libreoffice.app. So it looks like it's been quarantined by the, what is it, would you call it, X something?
X attribute, or Gatekeeper is
Gatekeeper.
Gatekeeper is the application verification, and then X-Protect is the antivirus protection.
X-Protect.
What is X-Protect? I don't even know about that.
It's a program built into the OS that protects against known viruses.
So am I doing a bad thing by running another antivirus on this Mac? Because I think I got the Avira or whatever it's called.
No, it's the X-Protect only does known viruses. Most of the antivirus programs you install will also look for patterns and try to find unknown viruses.
All right, so this is more of an OS situation than the LibreOffice has an
right,
issue situation.
Right, right. And that right-click open bypasses Gatekeeper, so you don't want to do that. You don't want to make it a habit of doing that.
Well, you do it once, and then it puts that on the list, so you don't need to do it
again. Right. But what I'm saying is, you don't want to make a habit of doing that over time.
Right. Yeah. So don't if you get an error message launching an app about bypassing Gatekeeper, you know, be really sure that's a known good app.
Right.
Okay.
But yeah, what you did should work now, and if you want to remove it permanently, there's that command line thing. Now, see, I think I've been using Linux for decades, so. For me, going to the command line is exactly the right thing to do.
Yep. But if you type the wrong thing in the command line.
That's a problem.
RM space minus R.
Don't minus F. Never mind.
You want it to minus R, so it goes recursively.
Right. So at any rate, the basic idea here is what happened was it got quarantined by Gatekeeper.
Okay.
You can remove that quarantine with this command line thing, or as Steve said, with the shift open, whatever you did, whatever it is, that also apparently removes it from Gatekeeper.
It puts it on the whitelist.
Right. So you may have to do that every time you update it, because unless of course you can go into Gatekeeper and whitelist it there.
No, but you can turn Gatekeeper off completely, which you shouldn't do.
Which you shouldn't do.
Yeah.
Right.
I actually saw an exploit once for Android, and step one is go into security. Step two, enable side-loading programs. Step three, run our installer. So they actually told you how to turn off the protection that protects you against this bad program.
Nice.
As part of the installation instructions.
Nice. So anyway, the basic idea is I suspect LibreOffice is working fine for you now.
Yeah, it is now. Everything, I can open up whatever I've got. So,
right,
you know,
right.
As long as it's working, I'm not going to touch it. But
Nick said, the next version update you run may run into the same problem.
Right.
But hopefully they will have fixed it.
Moving to the next OS system, because it says they have a free upgrade to whatever the next thing is, which I can't remember.
Yes, the current version 10.12 is Sierra. The biggest issue is checking your apps for compatibility. If you're running third-party apps or older apps, you want to make sure they're compatible before you upgrade. The long way around it is call each company or go to each company's website to see what their Sierra compatibility notice is. It's like on Windows, you got to check for Windows 10 upgrade compatibility. There is a website called Roaring Apps, where it's a community-driven website where you put in the name of the program you're running, and it will show you any reports about compatibility issues.
Oh, great. Okay. I'll check that out, too, then.
Okey-doke.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
No, absolutely. Our pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
Yep. Again, now, you know, security...
Gatekeeper is signed to developer programs.
Right.
Shouldn't LibreOffice be a signed developer?
Yes, and I'm sure it is, and I'm sure this is just a glitch.
Yeah.
Because it seems to be a fairly new issue that people are having. So somebody screwed up the last version of Gatekeeper, and of course you upgrade Gatekeeper like you upgrade everything, and yeah. If they've glitched it somehow, that's the way that's going to happen. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Craig from Greece, New York. What's up, Craig?
Well, I have a question about Chromebook.
Yeah.
My wife and I both have Android phones and Android tablets, and we use Lookout for security on those devices.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I've never heard you say anything about needing something like that on the Chromebook or not. And I was wondering if you do or don't.
You don't.
No.
You don't.
No.
Here's the deal. The Chromebook was designed from the ground up to be secure, and here's how they do it. Inside the Chromebook are two versions of the operating system.
Okay.
One that is locked and read-only, and the other that you run. And every time the Chromebook boots up, it checks them against each other. If there's a discrepancy, it then goes to the tiebreaker, which is a secret site at Google.
Okay.
If there is an issue, then it will give you a thing that says, I can't boot right now, upgrade. And what it does is it then downloads the latest and greatest, just like you normally update, right?
Mm-hmm.
It downloads the latest and greatest and installs that and does all that. So the deal is that Chromebooks, and then once you've booted, the OS, by the way, locks again. So you've got two locked versions of the OS running. So it is very difficult to infect a Chromebook. In fact, there's a thing called Pwn2Own, P-W-N, the number 2, O-W-N, that happens every year. And they get a bunch of hackers together, and they offer big rewards, thousands upon thousands upon tens of thousands of dollars to break into systems. Plus, you get the system that you broke into, which is always the highest end it is possible to buy of that system. And generally speaking, the Mac falls first, followed by the Windows machine, followed by eventually the Linux machine, and the Chromebook has never been broken. And that's not to say they can't get a virus.
Right.
But
you reboot and it's gone.
The deal is the rules are it has to be persistent. So okay. If I turn off the Chromebook and restart it again, it's clean.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, you don't, at this point at least, those of you listening to the archive in the distant future, I make no guarantees, but at this moment at least, the Chromebook is clean.
Okay. All right, great. Now, just out of curiosity, some of the Chromebooks are going to start being able to do the Android apps.
Right.
Will that change?
Probably, but we don't know that yet.
Okay.
We don't know anything about that yet.
Okay.
I'll be reporting it when we can. All right, thanks.
All right.
Good luck. Have fun with your Chromebooks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina, Francesco, and you, 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz, 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Jim from Fairport on the line. Hi, Jim. What's up?
Hi. I'm wondering if you've heard anything about battery drain after the Nougat update. I just went to 7.0 and I have a Moto Z Force and it's running down the battery maybe 25-26%.
What type of phone do you have?
The rest goes to Verizon's voicemail. And
what phone do you have?
Pardon?
What phone do you have?
What phone do you have?
It's the Motorola Moto Z Force.
Okay.
They get theirs a little earlier than Samsung.
Yeah, Samsung, yeah, they do.
Samsung seems to sit on them for a while.
Yeah, they do. Basically, there's a battery optimization screen.
Yeah.
In there, and what you want to do is reset all the app preferences.
I saw that. I did it. It hasn't really helped.
Really?
Yeah.
Hello? Hello? Well, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Wow. Nothing. My hands did not leave my body. I didn't touch it.
There are lots of reports about battery issues, but I almost think that's kind of in general. No one thinks the battery lasts long enough.
Well, right. But it appears that seems to be working for everybody. But of course, you know, you can turn off Wi-Fi and turn off location services and turn off
all the features.
Yeah, you can turn off a lot of the other bloatware in that.
Right. You shouldn't have to do that.
Take it back to the Verizon store. Who knows? It could be a defective battery in that unit.
Well, that's exactly right. And I mean, you know, I would suggest that they change out the battery.
Let a tech over there check it out to make sure, you know, if he just got the phone, you know, that something isn't defunct in that.
Yeah.
That is unusual for, you know, relatively new phone.
You may want to do a deep cycle, let it drain all the way down to you know, 1% or so. Ignore those low warning messages at the end, and then charge it fully overnight.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a couple options.
One of the problems, of course, with any lithium-ion battery is that at some point it kind of gets used to having two-thirds charge, whatever it happens to be, and it thinks that's normal.
Yeah.
Right. So, I don't know. It seems to me that I'm seeing a lot of people that helped and a couple that it didn't, so I'm not sure what causes that. I would also check to see if any of the apps that I'm using are data hogs.
His biggest one was the Verizon voicemail. So stop checking your voicemail, I guess.
No. Well, right. Yeah. But because it's interesting, my wife and I have identical phones, and my daughter was in Japan, so we installed WhatsApp because that was the only way she was going to be able to talk to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so on her phone, the minute she installed that app, it was draining the battery like crazy.
Hmm.
My phone, nothing. And the settings are identical.
Weird.
When she came back, we took that app off her phone, and her battery is now as fine as it ever was. I left it on my phone, and I still have, you know, 2 days worth of... I don't get it. I don't know.
Maybe just like on phones, okay? I mean, here's my shot at it. You know how they'll do revisions on the circuit boards?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, if hers was made, say, 2 weeks later or a week later, and they were instituting a revision to that board. You know, they're the same exact, just like computers. You know, you can get the exact same computer, but they could have two different motherboards in them. Just because all of a sudden, this week, they got a revision board, and now this board's going into that exact same phone versus, you know, like a computer. I mean, that's totally possible.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, a revision.
Yep. He should also check to see that, in fact, the turning off, clearing all of that up actually worked.
Because
on some phones, it does not, as a matter of fact. Resetting the app preferences.
And you may have to then do a cold boot after you set them just to make sure that
they know they're set. Right.
Shut it totally down.
Yep.
Make sure they're reset. Shut it down. Reset. Restart it.
Yep.
That has to be
Have you tried unplugging it and plugging it back in?
Yeah, but it has a battery in it, so forget that.
Yeah, you got to totally let it go dark, let it set for a minute or two, and then let it boot up fresh so you get the tones and everything else like most phones do when they first boot up.
Yep. And so that's part of that process. So Jim, if you didn't do that, check that they're turned off and then restart your phone if you haven't done that. But like I said, it worked for most people, didn't work for a couple. So I'm not entirely certain how that plays out there. I apologize. I don't.
Probably, as Dave was saying, the subtle differences between models.
Yeah. Right.
It's the same model with, you know, one different component. You know, Tuesday we got this chip supply, Thursday we got this chip supply. Yeah,
that's exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, it could be that simple.
We see it all the time in everything else. There's no reason to think it's not happening in phones as well. A simple, tiny change, or just batch to batch.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the first thoughts that apparently Samsung was saying about their Galaxy battery problems. Is
right.
that this supplier, they were okay, and this other supplier, they weren't necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Right. But yeah, Motorola. Samsung is going to brick all the remaining Note 7 phones. Mm. They're going to send out an update, as it were, that bricks the phone. Verizon, of course, has said they are not going to send out that update.
Oh, okay.
Because it would be dangerous to leave people without a phone.
Yeah.
It's dangerous to leave people with an IED.
I think I read they already sent an update that would stop it charging at 80% or something like
yeah.
that. So
right,
it can't
they did do
charge
that one.
Too high.
Right. They did do that one, but now they're saying that they want to, because people aren't turning them in.
Right, yeah.
Because they are great phones. Yeah, they are great phones.
Like I say, the only reason I did was because I held out for the Google Pixel phone.
Right.
And I read all the reviews on that. Again, listening to you
yep.
ahead of time about it, and I checked it all out. And I, okay, since I got to get rid of it. Because, here was the other thing. I got a notice from them that if I didn't turn the phone in a certain time period, after the notices, I was going to be charged for that phone.
Yep.
Full price.
Yep.
Or what I hadn't yep. paid off on it.
Right. And people apparently didn't care. They wanted that phone.
So that maybe they're waiting for the Galaxy 8.
Well,
now that's
going to
be confusing, too, because there's also a Galaxy 8 tablet.
Right.
And now there's going to be a Galaxy 8 phone that's not an 8-inch tablet.
Well, but it's an S8.
It's not an 8-inch phone, either.
Right.
It's a small 8.
Right, the small 8. It's a mini V8 is what it is.
All right, I'm going to change topics here for just a moment.
Hold on.
All right,
I'm ready.
All right, because I was kind of looking at the calendar.
Uh-huh.
And there's always a tradition we usually do around the holiday time. And we are going to be here the 24th, right?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Well, then by that time, I will have the official Rumball show.
They should be marinating already.
that's right. Well, that's what I was sitting down.
Eating with a spoon this year.
Yeah.
I was sitting down and, because the month will get away before you know it. And with work and everything else going on in my life, I thought, okay, I got to try to plan out the different times because I have the system,
because
I do the rum balls and I do the cutouts and everything
one
else.
One shot for the recipe, one shot for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, all right, then we will plan. Then December 24th.
I'm ready.
Will be the official Sound Bites.
My daughter will be home. She can be my designated driver.
All right, mm-hmm. there. I am leaving. That's a good one. And, I will bring the rum balls in for that show. And we can just, celebrate Christmas with everybody else.
Perfect.
Yeah. So, all right. We're in agreement with that. That's all I had to.
I'm
one more thing
that.
I could
I'm
check
good
out.
With that.
Yep. Cool.
All right. Speaking of Google, by the way, which we have been with the phones.
Yeah.
I am jealous that you have the Google Pixel. I think it's a great phone. Google is already the world's largest private buyer of energy from renewable resources, leaving Amazon a distant second, and it used renewables to meet 44% of its needs last year. By next year, Google says it will be fully powered by renewable energy. The decision has been taken in part for cost reasons, as the price of renewables has recently tumbled, but its European head of energy, Mark Oman, insists that it isn't about greenwashing, which means presenting an environmentally responsible image. We are convinced this is good for business. This is not greenwashing, Oman said. This is about locking in prices for us in the long term. Increasingly, renewable energy is the lowest cost option. Our founders are convinced that climate change is a real immediate threat, so we want to do our part. Of course, Google won't literally just be using energy generated from wind and solar farms or whatever. The nature of national grid infrastructures prevents that. Instead, it will be paying enough units, paying for enough units to account for its usage in a carbon offsetting program. To reach this goal, we'll be directly buying enough wind and solar energy annually to account for every unit of electricity our operations consume globally, said Ernst Holzel, Google's chief VP of technical infrastructure, in a blog post on the initiative. We're focusing on creating new energy from renewable resources, so we only buy from projects that are funded by our purchases. The cost of wind and solar has fallen by 60 and 80% respectively in the past 6 years, he said, and Google now buys energy from 20 renewable projects around the world, including sites in Sweden, the Netherlands, and Chile. Electricity costs are one of the largest components of our operational expenses at our data centers, Holzel continued. Having a long-term stable cost of renewable power provides protection against price swings in energy. He said that the 100% renewable target, which Google first set for itself in 2012, is just the first step. So, what might Google's next step be? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
A lot of big companies have started, have been talking about their green renewables and especially the data centers, which suck up tons of power. Sometimes literally you have a ton of generator next to you. And we're seeing some nice things. Apple has talked about some of their solar farms that they're putting together. Most of their data centers have a solar farm on the roof. The new spaceship campus is going to have a huge solar array on the roof as well, trying to be, you know, completely 100% renewable.
Mm-hmm. Right. And of course, solar cells are getting more efficient as time goes on.
And lower cost.
Right, which results in a lower cost of the thing. So we're seeing that better and better. You know, they used to be at 5%, and now some of them are in the 20% range. So, and some of the experimental ones are all the way up to 30%. Although we're certainly not seeing those out in the field yet. So that works.
We just need a solar power satellite. You know, 100% conversion, because it's in orbit above the atmosphere, and just a microwave beam down. And during the winter, they can pan the microwave beam across the north and warm the houses.
Warm it up.
was it Larry Niven? Fallen Angels.
Fallen Angels, Fallen absolutely. Angels, yep. Great book, by the way.
The Ice Age advanced across North America, except for Winnipeg, because that's where Worldcon was that year. They had a solar power satellite.
Nice. Our next caller is Donna from Henrietta, New York. What's up, Donna?
I'm just calling to find out, how does a micro SD card in my phone just all of a sudden disappear, go bad, not work?
Well,
things break.
Yeah.
Short answer.
The reality is that hardware is hardware, and sometimes it just dies.
May not be the card. It may be the reader in the phone. If you try that card on a different device, it might work.
Right. And most of them have, when you buy the SD card, you can also get a carrier that turns it into the micro SD card gets a carrier that turns it into a regular SD thing. And if you put the chip in that and put it in your computer, maybe you can read it there. But sometimes they just die. I've stopped, you know, buying the inexpensive ones because I had one die on me,
they tend to die a little sooner.
Right. And now I spend the extra, and it's probably twice as much. So it's, you know, $15 to buy the higher end one, and it works. But yeah, they can just simply stop working. They also can get unseated if you joggle your phone or drop it often enough.
No, that was the weird thing. It was working fine, and then in the middle of the day, yesterday, it just wasn't showing up at all, and I hadn't dropped the phone. I hadn't done anything. I hadn't opened the back, and it's the phone's only August.
Right. Yeah, so if take the card out, reseat it, you know, reboot the phone, it might work.
I did, and I rebooted in safe mode and spent a lot of time with somebody in a foreign country for the help desk for Motorola.
Yeah.
to no avail. So.
Well, okay. listen, if
it's not that old, it should be under warranty. You could get it replaced.
Right. Two things. You should first check the card in your regular computer and see if it works there. And the second thing you should do is try a different card.
Yeah, I just ordered one.
There you go.
Tomorrow.
And so if that works, then you know that the problem was the card. And if that doesn't work, then the problem might be the reader.
Okay.
Okie doke. Sorry.
Nope, that's great. Good enough. Thank you very much.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's one of the things we get asked all the time in our service industries. Why did it break? I'm sorry, things break. It worked fine yesterday.
Yep.
That's what happens. They work until they don't.
Until they don't. All right, we're going to take another quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 40 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. And they're truly great and truly grateful to be member supported by you, Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Everybody get up.
Howdy, folks. This is Dan Gross. You can listen to me Mondays 6 to 8 p.m. here on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Apple says it's not to blame for a spate of iPhones apparently catching fire, or as Apple is calling them, thermal events. Thermal events.
We're having a thermal event here in town today.
Yeah, right.
Negative thermal event. Yeah.
Right, right. That phrase, of course, could also be used to describe a volcanic eruption, but in this case, it's just talking about iPhones catching fire. The Shanghai Consumer Council, a watchdog group in China, reported last week that 8 iPhone 6 devices had spontaneously combusted. It's a miracle. Apple's response is that external damage was to blame for these thermal events with the phone batteries. We've been in touch with the customers and retrieved these units for analysis, a spokesrobot said. We do a thorough forensic investigation, including CT scans, cross sections, and more. The units we've analyzed so far have clearly shown that external physical damage happened to them, which led to the thermal event. You know, if that external physical damage didn't include a bullet, it probably shouldn't have. Anyway, batteries have been causing headaches for smartphone manufacturers over the last year. Apple exchanged iPhone 6 and 6S models in China after they switched themselves off whenever the battery charge reached 30%, while Samsung was forced to recall millions of Galaxy Note 7 devices due to their tendency to overheat and catch fire. Overheat and have a thermal event.
Yeah.
Samsung's recall was worldwide. Apple's has been mostly confined to China. In America, they're telling people to update to the latest version of iOS, which apparently works only in America and not in China. Anyway, how low can your battery go? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, Apple has an interesting track history with different problems, people report. They actually, right now, there is a battery replacement program for the iPhone 6S for a sudden shutdown condition. Meaning your battery doesn't last as long as it should.
That's a 30% shutdown?
Yeah, you get down to 40-30% and it shuts off. Right. So that's a free replacement. But the touch disease on the 6 Plus that has been talked about, where you get lines at the top of the screen and the touch doesn't work, Apple has said that's because you dropped it too many times. So what becomes a manufacturing defect they fix, and what becomes, what can we blame on the user?
Right.
So if you've been reading Dilbert the last few days, they're having their own issue with exploding batteries.
Right.
And so, of course, Dilbert takes it to the absurd extreme, which is why we like it. But it's not that extreme because we see a lot of it happen
so much.
Well,
exactly. I get it. That's one of the reasons that I'm very happy with my Galaxy S5 because I can remove the battery. You can't remove the battery in the Pixel now. That's too bad.
I don't No, you can't.
Yeah, that's too bad. I like the ability to remove the battery. It means I can replace it if it starts to not be happy, or if I decide I want to have two of them when I'm on a trip, I can do that. So I really like that, but sadly, that's not the trend in the industry. It saves them a nickel to be able to.
In a few years, we'll be going back to, you know, to something else again. You know, it's
right.
They liken it to the cars in the '50s. First, it was fins. You had to have the biggest fins, and then suddenly fins were old.
Out. Yeah.
Out. Oh, don't want fins anymore. So right now, thin is in.
Chrome everywhere.
Chrome, and hopefully soon in a years we'll be going back to more power and not thin.
Wait a minute.
Chrome's always been a mandatory thing on a Harley.
Yeah. Well, yes. We're talking about the other two wheels.
That's how I used to always tell Lori, you know, well, you had Chrome, makes it go faster.
Yes.
So we had to have more Chrome.
More Chrome is the answer, always. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ed? Ed, are you there?
When you buy a new mobile phone, what's the best way to get your data from your old phone to the new phone so you don't lose any pictures or whatever?
Magic. What type of phone is it? An Android or an Apple phone?
It's a Samsung Android.
Okay. The easiest thing you can do is to put all of your photos in Google Photo.
And your contacts in Google Contacts and your mail in Google Mail.
Right. And then when you get the new phone, you just sign in with your Google username and password, and all of those things come right back down to your phone without a problem.
Same thing on the Apple phone, using Apple's iCloud services and with Windows Phone and Windows services.
Yeah, because in the phone, you can sit there, usually on most of them, with the, you know, like you said, in the setups, under your Google email address, say what to back up, and you can even do your text messages.
Yeah.
How about things like phone numbers and stuff like that?
That's your contacts.
That's your contacts. Those will all go as well.
And even the pictures associated with the contacts will move.
Yep.
Many phones will have, I've seen this on the iPhone too, they'll have an On My Phone section, like when you go into contacts, and on the cloud section. And only the things on the cloud will transfer automatically.
Now,
so you want to make sure you put all of your stuff on the cloud.
Right. So here's the issue with contacts, though. We were talking about this earlier, and on the Samsung Galaxy models, Samsung has their own messaging app. And if you're using those, I don't even know how you get the messages to go over. If you're using Google's messaging app, then like we said, you can put them in the cloud.
Many times the carriers will have a transfer box. Basically, they plug both phones in at once and copy everything, because that's how it used to be done before the cloud services started doing all that syncing and backing up option.
Somebody said that also you could put it on an SD card. I didn't quite understand that.
Well, you can. You can, assuming that you have an app that will let you get into the operating system itself. This was our second phone call with Al. Where do you find all those things, and how do you move them from one place to another?
Yeah, but so the cloud is a better way to go than for everything, right?
Yeah, much easier, particularly if you've got Wi-Fi turned on your phone. Then you're not using your data to do that when you set up that initial backup.
Yeah,
there you go. That's excellent.
And it looks like Samsung's internal OS does have a backup my data. So it will back up your data, say, to an SD card, and then when you get the new phone, if it's a new Samsung phone, you restore from the SD card.
Well, here's the other thing that happened with my, because I've had Samsung phones. They have an app for the Samsung, and at the store, they can literally put another battery or chip in your other phone to get it started in that, and they can swap and move everything from your old phone to your new one. Yep. Because we had to do that one time, and it's a Samsung swap, as
long as you're buying another Samsung phone.
Yeah,
the beauty of having everything in the Google ecosystem is that if you move to that Pixel, it still works.
Yeah, it doesn't matter which phone, as long as it's an Android system, you log in with your Google ID and boom, it all comes down. Done.
And then both Google and Apple have tools to let you switch platforms so that you can go from one platform to another and it will still copy your data over.
Right.
This could be a Samsung phone going to an LG phone, but it's, it's still the Android system.
Right, and so you would need to make sure that everything is in the Google infrastructure. Yeah, right?
Gotcha.
That messages are from Google and the photos, of course, are from Google. Turn all those things on. Make sure you're signed in with your Google username and password, and you'll get all that stuff backed up. And it may take a while, depending on how fast your internet connection is and how many pictures, et cetera, right? But you can set all those things to back up to the cloud, give them enough time to do so, and then when you change phones, it'll again take a little while for them all to come down again, but then they'll be there.
And you generally should be backing up all the time anyway, just in case your phone dies, you know, you, something gets deleted, it crashes. Not necessarily you're moving to a new phone, but have a backup copy in case something goes wrong with your current one.
Right. I asked them once, and they said that it does that automatically. I wasn't quite sure that's true.
Well, you have to make sure it's turned
out, actually, by just going to photos.google.com.
Yeah, okay.
And in your phone, go into the settings and make sure backup is turned on, enabled, and it should tell you when the last backup was to make sure it is running.
Right, but whenever I take a picture, within a couple of minutes, boom, it's up on the web, and I'm done. And, you know, I don't have to worry about it anymore. So check that's happening for you, and you win.
Okay, but hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
All right, thank you. Good luck. Well, that music tells me you've wasted 2 hours of your life with this nonsense, but you'll get a chance to do it again next week because we're going to be back here again with a whole lot more sound bites. Now, don't go away because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. We are Sound Bites right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to be member-supported, Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.